Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
This is the story of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. Then one day, an ordinary guy got ripped off buying razors. He was so fed up that he and his best friend started a company to fix shaving. They called it Harry's. By taking less profit and selling online, Harry's can offer quality blades for less. You can even get Harry's 5-blade razor and shave gel for free when you sign up. Just cover shipping. Click or go to harrys.com and enter code RAZOR at checkout. That's RAZOR, R-A-Z-O-R.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, you can follow John at JONLITTERINE. You can follow me at JakeSki52. Today we're going to be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights at UFC 207, a card marking the long-awaited return of Ronda Rousey. To get things going, John, first off, thanks for joining. How are things going? And I do want to ask right away, since we last spoke at about UFC 206, what was your biggest takeaway from the Pettis versus Holloway or anything else from the card?
Well, you know, the Pettis-Holloway fight kind of went, you know, how I thought it would. I think it's just clear at this point in time that Holloway is just a better fighter than Pettis for numerous reasons. But, you know, I guess looking back on it, the biggest thing you would have to say that came out of 206 was that, you know, crazy fight between Cub Swanson and Duhu Choi. I guess that would have to be the highlight. And of course, you have Donald Cerrone's insane, you know, head kick finish and Matt Brown. It was a good card, and I mean, Lando Venata's, you know, knocked John McDessie out cold. So
yeah, I mean, start to finish. I mean, they re-aired it on Fox on Christmas Eve, and it averaged. It didn't peak, but it averaged. I saw like 4.7 million viewers. So who knows? Maybe we'll see the UFC doing that more often.
Yeah, I think they said it was the highest. I mean, obviously it's a replay, but I think they said it was the highest rated UFC show on event on Fox since the first UFC on Fox number one, which is, you know, years and years ago. So you know, it just proves that people want to, you know, you almost want to say people want to see better action on replay, you know, than they do boring fights live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because yeah, people either way, you know, they knew it was a good card and wanted to see it for the first time, or like myself, just wanted to rewatch it. But anyway, UFC 206 is in the books. We're going to look ahead to UFC 207 with a little bit of a DraftKings focus. Let's kick things off with the main event, John. We've got Amanda Nunes coming in at 13-4. She is the current champion, who will be taking on Ronda Rousey, who's been off for about 13 months. Rousey, of course, 12-1, with her only loss being to Holly Holm this last November, two Novembers ago, really. But Rousey's 8,400 on DraftKings. Nunes, 8,000 on DraftKings. Rousey, a slight favorite, minus 135. Nunes, plus 115 dog here. How do you see this one playing out, John?
Yeah, this is really hard. I had a really hard time picking this fight. I guess the whole thing comes down to how much do you think Rousey's first loss is going to affect her? Obviously, it's never happened before. I thought it was smart for her to take such a long time away. You know, she'd fought a lot, and even though almost all her fights were short as far as, you know, length of time in the octagon, I thought it was a good idea that she just got away from the sport after her loss to Holly Holm in, you know, November 2015. Now, the question is, I would have, and I've said this for a long time, I would have preferred to see Ronda Rousey go to some kind of different camp and get some kind of different training. She's been reluctant to do it. She hasn't done it. This, to me, is not the best matchup for her in her return. She definitely, I think, would have been better off facing a grappling-based opponent, whether it be Sarah McMahon's wrestling or Misha Tate, before she retired, her submission skills, those kind of fights, I think she would have been fine. I ended up picking Nunes, and if you would have told me, a year and a half ago that I would have picked Amanda Nunes over Ronda Rousey in any fight under any circumstances, I never would have believed you. Mm-hmm. But Rousey's striking defense looked so bad in the home fight that I'm not sure she's capable of making the necessary adjustments, in really just a little over a year now. Nunes doesn't have the back pedigree striking background, that someone like Holly Holm did, like a champion kickboxer. But mm-hmm. if you wanted to say she had more power than Holm, I'd be willing to listen.
Yeah, I could buy it, man. I saw Amanda Nunes at UFC 200 upset Misha Tate and really just overwhelm Misha Tate in the first round in all facets of the striking department. She hits hard, and that's no joke. And I like how you mentioned the camp, John, because Edmund Tarverdian, the coach there, I don't quite think that he's going to dial up the recipe to lead Rousey to success. I am with you there. The Holly Holm thing, the biggest thing that stands out to me was him basically telling Rousey to go at her and to strike with her when she was just getting picked apart on the feet here. So I think Rousey needs to employ a more smart game plan here, because she's not going to want to stand and trade with Nunes, because that's just a recipe for disaster. If she does win, if Rousey wins, I see it being as more of a withstand the first round, judo throw in the second round, and kind of work that into a submission. I think that's Rousey's best path to victory.
It definitely is. I mean, and if you told me that, Rousey's going to be able to get her on the ground and grab a hold of her limb, obviously, you have to like her chances of winning. But what everybody forgets about, the Rousey Holly Holm fight is that even though the fight lasted, into a minute into the second round, 59 seconds into the second round, Rousey was getting her brains beat in from pretty much the opening bell on. Mm-hmm. She was getting, hammered on the feet. Now, Amanda Nunes, the other thing about her is she's very, very strong. So, I don't know if Rousey's going to be able to just grab a hold of her and throw her to the mat like she, did to Alexis Davis and, the McMahon fight and the Catanzaro fight. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, the other thing I don't particularly like is this whole route, and you've heard it a lot over the past, few days. It sort of seems like the U.S. is making UFC is making exceptions for Rousey as far as her commitments to what she has to do, as far as, interviews and open workouts and that kind of stuff. And Dana White said today, I believe, you know, this is a one-time thing. You know, this isn't happening again. You know, I'll believe that when I see it. But it's, you know, it's pretty much, I think she's committed. You know, I think she wants to fight now.
She looks like she's in good shape. You know, you saw the pictures of her in her fight kit. She looks very cut and ready to go.
Yeah, she looks ready to go. But, you know, the other thing is, say she loses this fight. You know, if she loses, I really part of me would say I can't see her stepping away, you know, off back-to-back losses and you know, going out like that. But on the other hand, you know, she certainly doesn't need the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and plenty of other opportunities.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She has interests outside the sport, so she can make a perfectly fine living doing movies and doing commercials or doing whatever it is she wants to do. So I don't really think she doesn't need the money, which you hear even more and more these days about, you know, fighters who just fight as often as they can because they don't make enough money. You know, fighters like Rousey and Conor McGregor, you know, they're not fighting for the money. So. And, you know, she had an appearance at WrestleMania. So I'm sure if she was really interested, she could get involved with that. Yep. There's a whole lot of things she could do that don't involve fighting for the UFC.
And I've heard other fighters say before that the moment you're even, you know, only 90% in and maybe 10% out, the moment you're not 100% in is probably the time when it's starting to call it quits because you need to be 100% going into that octagon mentally, and that's the question mark.
You have fighters like, and then you'll see some fighters like, you know, Miesha Tate, who I think Miesha Tate's 29 now, knows when it's time to step away, and then you'll have other fighters who just, you know, don't know when to quit. So I think this is going to be a competitive fight.
Very exciting.
I would be surprised if, you know, either one rolled over the other one, but you have to, you know. And I like, as far as Nunes goes, I like the fact that she's flying under the radar here. You know, there's nobody, and people have written articles about this, numerous journalists, no one's talking about her. It's hard to believe she's the one who's entering the fight as the champion. I think that help. I really think that's going to help her.
Yeah, we saw from 200 that she's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. And that's huge here. The last thing I want to talk about with these two women is the odds to finish on this fight. They are spectacular. The odds of this not going to a decision basically are -1175. I looked at it a couple days ago. It was about not -970, but -1175 for the fight not going to a decision, and then in under 1.5 rounds even is -200 to -225. So what that tells you is there's going to be some finish, whether it's Rousey by submission, maybe Nunes by TKO, but you want to get some piece of this on DraftKings just because of that early knockout possibility.
Yeah, you know, we see it all the time, you know, elite athletes, when their backs are seemingly up against the wall, they come out and they look their best. So, you know, if Rousey got a quick stoppage, I certainly wouldn't be surprised, but it's hard to believe everything that Amanda Nunes has done. Someone who has entered the roster more or less as roster death, really. You know, no one really thought much of her when she made her company debut, you know, in August 2013. And she's 6-1 in the company. Miesha Tate, Valentino Shevchenko, Sarah McMahon, Jermaine Durandamy, who's going to fight for the inaugural featherweight title at the next pay-per-view. And her lone loss was to Kat Zingano in a fight where, if you remember, she was obliterating Zingano early. And Zingano, you know, held on and eventually, you know, turn the tide in that fight. But she has a lot of things going for her. Not only does she have a lot of power, you know, she's a good wrestler. She's an underrated. She has more submission skills than she gets credit for. And like I said before, she's very strong. So if, you know, I think if Rousey makes the mistake of thinking she's going to push her up against the fence or throw her to the ground and just, you know, rip her arm off, I don't think that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And as always, and I've said this a million times too, I look and I value camps, and you know, if it's all things considered, you know, two fighters, blind fighters, where you don't know their names, I'm taking the person who trains with the American Top Team over the person that trains with the Glendale Fight Club.
Yeah, very, very excellent point there, John. Let's shift our focus over to another five-round championship fight. This comes in the men's bantamweight division. We have Dominic Cruz entering at 22-1, welcoming the challenger, Cody Garbrandt, who is he's going to be welcoming Cody Garbrandt, to the octagon. Salaries and Vegas odds both have this one a little bit lopsided towards Cruz. Cruz is 8,700, Garbrandt 7,700. Cruz is a minus 225 favorite, Garbrandt plus 185. The odds to finish on this are minus 145, so not all that strong. I know you're a big proponent of Dominic Cruz being one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the entire world. Do you think he takes care of business on Friday?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's at the point where the way this sport is these days, everybody loses eventually. It just seems somehow. Mm-hmm. But until, you know, Dominic Cruz and Demetrius Johnson, I'll give you a spoiler right now, I will be picking both of them until they lose.
Yep.
You know, they both have enough of a body of work now that until someone actually, you know, Ric Flair to be the man, you got to beat the man. Until someone beats them, and somebody will eventually beat both of them, but I, for the life of me, I can't figure out how it's going to happen. I don't know who's going to beat this. I don't know how you can beat this guy.
Yep. Now, Garbrandt's going to come out swinging. His early knockout power is what got him this far. The excitement that he always brings into the octagon here, and he's not going to back away from any trash talking here. But you think it's just a matter of Cruz being able to out-technique him in a way, being better on the feet to avoid the big shot and gradually pick him apart over the course of five rounds?
Yeah, I think it's Cruz's footwork. You know, I think Garbrandt's going to, like you said, I think Garbrandt's going to throw these monster shots. And he's going to find that Dominic Cruz isn't standing there. Garbrandt's good and he's young. So at age 25, he has theoretic room for improvement. And, you know, he's probably a top five bantamweight. And if not now, you know, he'll certainly get there. And I see how, as far as, like you said, the trash talking, I can see how they think. The UFC thinks this fight makes sense at the time. Garbrandt's older than we talked about before, how younger fighters like Paige VanZant and Sage Northcutt are kind of being rushed.
Yep.
I don't think that's the case here. I just think Garbrandt is, you know, facing a fighter who really the only thing in the world that's been able to slow the guy down is injuries.
Absolutely. So, one thing I do want to say about Dominic Cruz at 8,700, he's not the most expensive favorite on the card. And I think he's a good cash game play if you're looking for a high floor on DraftKings, because it's a five round fight. And I'm not so sure I see Cruz getting an early stoppage, but because of the way DraftKings scores things, Cruz will be able to get maybe a couple of takedowns and land enough strikes over the course of a five-round fight to have you a good chance of maybe hitting 100 DraftKings points.
It's certainly possible. You know, we've said this before, too. You do not want to fight Dominic Cruz in a five-round fight. You don't want to fight Demetrius Johnson in a five-round fight. Garbrandt has good cardio, but you're certainly not going to say he has better cardio, you know, than Cruz. So, does Garbrandt have the power to land, you know, one big punch that starts a flurry that ends the fight? Sure. But, you know, anybody can get caught with a big punch and lose. So, you know, it's what I said, you know, when we first started talking about this fight. Until someone actually beats this guy, I'm picking him. You know, he's had a ton of injury problems, as we've talked about. He's had major knee issues over the years. You know, he could go at any time, you know, but until he's been healthy for, you know, about a year and a half now. So knock on wood that, you know, he can keep that up. And, you know, if Garbrandt, you know, pulls the upset, you know, more power to him. But until, just like I said with Demetrius Johnson, until someone goes in and takes this guy's title, I'm not picking against them.
Exactly. And I think the whole staff feels the same way. This is one of the few fights where both you, me, Richard, and Evan, if you check out our staff picks on rotowire.com, it's a clean sweep for Cruz. So we're all feeling pretty confident about that here. Let's move ahead, though. What we were supposed to have here on the pay-per-view card, a heavyweight rematch here between Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Werdum. Of course, Cain Velasquez had to withdraw. He was saying how he couldn't stand more than 10 minutes before the fight. He's, of course, disappointing to see him go. Wishing the best of luck to him because he'll be undergoing surgery here, Cain Velasquez. So he'll be off. Instead, we get another men's bantamweight matchup between TJ Dillashaw and John Lineker. Dillashaw, a pretty big favorite on paper, minus 250. He's 8,800 on DraftKings compared to 7,400 for Lineker. Do you got Dillashaw on this one, John?
I do, not by as much as the odds and the salaries indicate. Mm-hmm. This is a heck of a fight, and I know a lot of times fights like this get overlooked when you have two title fights on a card. And this, you know, was even supposed to be further down the depth chart before the, Kane and Werdum fight got canceled, like you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is really good. Lineker's problem was he tried to fight a flyweight and he just couldn't make the weight. He's just too big. You put him at bantamweight and, he looks like a stone cold killer. So
Dillashaw has a 3-inch height advantage if you're doing size, but I mean, the reach is exactly the same here and the leg reach very similar as well.
Right. And I think the biggest difference here is if you want to say that Lineker has more one punch knockout power, I would probably agree with that. Mm-hmm. But
you don't get the name Hands of Stone for nothing.
No. But I think TJ's going to have a pretty significant speed advantage. I think he's going to be able to, get in and out quicker, certainly quicker than Lineker can. Now, I think Lineker is going to have to, for lack of a better term, outwork Dillashaw to win. Now, I don't think he's going to be able to land with the regularity that TJ does, in which case the strikes that he does land are going to have to, going to have to really do damage. I could see this fight going, certainly see this fight going the distance, which, is a little hard to believe with the power that Lineker has and, mm-hmm. The speed and technique that Dillashaw has. But, I think the winner of this fight gets a title shot, especially if it's Dillashaw and Cruz with, the great fight they had the first time.
I think everyone would love to see that rematch.
Oh, absolutely. That would be a great fight, a great rematch. But, this is one of those fights where, Dillashaw, based on his body of work, deserves to be the favorite, but I think both the odds and the salaries, like I mentioned, are a little bit lopsided. I certainly think Lineker has a better chance of winning than both of those would indicate. And I think this is going to be a close competitive fight. And as we say, every time we do this, somewhere along the line, you have to pick underdogs, and all things considered, I think Lineker is a good value all the way around.
Yeah, 7,400 is pretty cheap. Now, the thing with Dillashaw, I actually don't mind fading him in this card because he's $100 more than Dominic Cruz, and I would be much more inclined to use Cruz if I had a pick between Cruz and Dillashaw. And the other thing about that is the odds to finish are plus 160 on this one. So we're looking at a decision in a fight that's probably only three rounds. So I think for a lot of fantasy owners, it's going to come down to picking Cruz and Dillashaw. And in that case, I got to go Cruz every time.
Yeah. But I think the fact it's a 3-round fight certainly favors Lineker more than it favors Dillashaw in the sense that mm-hmm. for 15 minutes, Lineker can kind of let it go. For 25 minutes, you certainly think TJ would be the better option. So, it should be a really good fight, and I'm sure you'll get the best from both guys, knowing that I'm sure they realize that, it's more or less, not officially, but a title shot is pretty much on the line here.
All right, next up we have a welterweight bout between Donghyun Kim and Tarek Saffredine here. This got moved up to the pay-per-view portion of the card after the Velasquez-Werdum fight was scrapped here. I think UFC brass is thinking that this is going to be maybe a fast-paced fight with guys looking for the finish. Kim comes in as a favorite, 8,500 on DraftKings compared to Saffredine's $7,700 salary. Last I checked, odds were about minus 135 in favor of Kim, plus 115 in Saffredine being the underdog. Odds to finish plus 130. That's pretty close here. I mean, the salaries are a lot further apart than what the odds would suggest in this one, John.
Yeah, they are. And this is hard for me. both these guys have red flags for me. Saffedine's is that, you know, obviously in his last fight against Rick Story in May, he looked terrible. It was Story ended up winning in a unanimous decision. Saffedine took a pretty good beating in that fight, and he really didn't stand a chance. It was lopsided from the beginning. For you, those of you who don't know, Saffedine was expected to face Matt Brown here. Brown was yanked. You know, he fought Donald Cerrone a couple weeks ago at the pay-per-view, and now, you know, he gets Kim. So Saffedine's coming off a loss, and the issue I have with Kim is Kim hasn't fought anyone in the last 4.5 years or so. The only fighter Kim's fought who's really any good at all, or at least consistent at all, was Tyron Woodley. And in that fight, he was knocked out in just over a minute. Mm-hmm. So Kim, while certainly a very good fighter, hasn't really faced quality competition. But Kim, you know, in his career, he has a win over Brown. He has a win over TJ Grant, who was, you know, emerging as one of the better fighters in the world before he was effectively forced to retire, you know, due to concussion symptoms. He has a win over Nate Diaz in his, you know, early UFC career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I pick Saffedine. I certainly think Saffedine is a better value, like you mentioned, given the discrepancy in salaries between the two men. Mm-hmm. But I don't love either of these guys. What did you say the odds to finish were? +135?
Yeah, about +130. So, it's kind of a coin toss, but not looking like enough of a chance of a knockout to mean you have to get a piece of one of these guys. No, I think if you want one, you take Saffedine just because of the salary relief.
Yeah, I would think the odds of finishing of this fight going the distance are considerably better than that. Kim has 9 knockouts over the course of his career. Saffedine, believe it or not, and this is really hard to believe, only has one knockout his entire career. Which is really difficult to believe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have two guys.
Hope he racks up points or takedowns then.
Yeah, and Kim has 9 knockouts, but you know he's had 26 total fights, so it's not not a gigantic percentage. So this is a fight that this is actually an underrated fight in the sense mm-hmm. that it's something that I'm a fight that I'm really looking forward to seeing. But I would probably avoid this fight.
Yeah, exactly. So this is one where our staff is split 2-2 on. I definitely see where you're coming from with Saffedine. I think I got to take Kim on this one just because, what you said about Saffedine only having one knockout. Kim's only 3 losses in his career are by knockout here. But agreed that this is, if you're going to do it on DraftKings, maybe lean towards Saffedine a bit. But I do agree with your analysis of fading this fight. That's probably good from a daily fantasy perspective here. John, the final fight on the pay-per-view card is a flyweight matchup here between Lewis Smolka and Ray Borg. Smolka enters at 8,300 on DraftKings, Borg 7,900. This fight got Smolka -105, Borg -115. It's as close to a pick'em as you can get. How do you see this one playing out?
I took Smolka more or less because first of all, he has a 5-inch height advantage and a 5-inch reach advantage. Mm-hmm. He's 5'9", so in that division, he's going to have a considerable advantage in both categories over most anyone he faces. So that's not a surprise. But this is more kind of your classic striker versus grappler. Smolka's long limbs will give him a considerable advantage in the striking game. And Borg's wrestling ability is going to give him a serious advantage as far as takedowns. Now, as we say all the time, you have to at least be able to threaten your opponent on the feet. Because if you have no power and you can't land consistently on the feet, your opponent is going to tailor his game plan to prevent takedowns and you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And Borg, as good as he is and as young as he is, has really shown no ability over the course of his UFC career mm-hmm. to
threaten his opponents on the feet in the least. Mm-hmm.
To put that in perspective, his significant strikes landed per minute is only 1.3 compared to Smolka, who's landing just under 5 per minute in his UFC career. So, that, I mean, very, very big discrepancy in the striking department.
It's huge. And I think if you look at fighters, you know, at least, you know, high quality, respectable fighters on the UFC roster, that is probably amongst the least significant strikes per landed that you will ever see. Mm-hmm. That is a disturbingly low number. So, you know, this is, again, one of those fights where it's hard for me to advocate taking Borg, because any win that he has is almost certainly going to be dull, boring, and go the distance. It's just going to be him racking up takedowns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Borg, his takedown average is 3.74, and Luis Smolka only has about a 35-36% takedown defense. So from that aspect of it, I could see Borg getting, you know, with the increased emphasis on DraftKings scoring going to grappling, I could see there being Borg being in consideration at 7,900, but I don't necessarily like that. I leaned with you, John, because of the length advantage and the ability to rack up more points via significant strikes. So that's why I wanted to go Smolka as well.
Yeah, you know, the whole entire thing is just, again, probably a fight that's good to stay away from. You know, Smolka, at least he has the advantage of, and we say this all the time, being able to, his height and reach advantage will give him an ability to stay away and batter his opponent, while Borg, the only way Borg can connect, because he's so short compared to Smolka, is to be right up against him. So, you know, and also you can never count on anyone to get a quick submission or a quick knockout. So if you're playing the odds, and as you mentioned, Borg has all the takedowns he racked up over the course of his UFC career. But his last fight against Justin Scoggins, he went 1 out of 8. So, you know, if you're going for 8, 9, 10 takedowns a fight, you're probably going to land a couple of them, mm-hmm. which in turn is going to boost your stats. So. Yep. And I was a little bit surprised. This is a good fight, but I was a little surprised that the UFC put this where it did on the card, mm-hmm. only because, you know, we follow him and, you know, watch every event. But there's still a tendency to – and the bottom line is – and you'll see this when you see the ratings, and we say all the time that Demetrius Johnson does, even though he's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. People, for some reason, you know, casual fans at least, are just not – in love with fights involving smaller fighters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't move up Johnny Hendricks and Neil Magny from the FS1 prelim finale. I suppose they want to boost ratings for that as well.
That's what I mean. I think that's what I was going to say. I think they've been promoting that fight at that spot for so long. You know, you watch an NFL game on Fox on you know, last week, and you see, you know, 3 ads for, you know, Magny and Hendricks. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why they didn't do that. And, you know, this is a good fight, but I find it hard to take Borg, like I said, for no other reason, because any win he racks up is likely to just be takedowns and grinding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, not a great, neither guy really, to be honest, a terrific option.
All right. Okay, so that's going to wrap things up for the main card there, John. A little bit more fantasy discussion before we wrap up here. First and foremost, a DraftKings value play, whether it's someone that we talked about or someone that we didn't. I know for example, we both picked Dillashaw, but I think John Lineker at 7,400 could be a good value play, especially in GPP, especially if he can connect early. Anybody else on your radar jump out as a potential value play?
You know, I think Johnny Hendricks is a pretty good value play. Mm-hmm. Again, a year ago, 18 months ago, if you would have told me Johnny Hendricks was an underdog to Neil Magny, give me a break. I mean, come on. Hendricks has, I believe, gone on record as stating that he would retire if he lost this fight. I think he said that a while ago, but I believe he did say that.
I mean, he's lost 3 of his last 4, but they've been very, very tough opponents, guys like Gastelum, Thompson, and Lawler.
Right. And, you know, look, Johnny Hendricks is a better fighter than Neil Magny. Okay. Hendricks has obviously, as you know, problems with weight cutting and, you know, all those kind of things. So, as we always say, we reserve judgment until we see these guys on the scale and if they have their act together. But, you know, and the other thing is, a lot of Hendricks has had problems. I've said this before, had problems in the past with game planning. Hendricks fought Stephen Thompson and decides to get into a kickboxing match with him. I mean, how dumb can you be? You can't, you know, you can't do that.
He had 4 DraftKings points in that fight, if you know, if that means anything for it. I mean, that's essentially a guaranteed ticket to a loss in DFS.
It is, and especially for a guy who we have seen has shown an ability, you know, in the Robbie fights against Robbie Lawler, you know, are a perfect example. An ability, a guy who can take a beating.
I mean, yeah, Hendricks had 84 DraftKings points in the fight against Lawler, took him down 5 points, or five times. So even though he lost a 5-round decision here, he was still a pretty good value play on DraftKings. Now, give him a fight in one where we think maybe he could be a favorite, well, then who knows what could happen. I agree with you, John.
It's, you know, he took a beating in both the Robbie Lawler fights. He took a beating in his loss to George St. Pierre. He took a beating in his last fight and his loss to Kelvin Gastelum. So, you know, I think if Hendricks clamps down and really, you know, commits to the takedown and what made him a successful fighter in the first place, I think he wins this fight. Now, Neil Magny's takedown defense over the course of his UFC career is just over 64%. Not terrible, certainly, but not great. You know, elite guys are more in the 80-plus range. So, you know, it's not the worst we've ever seen, but certainly not the best. And, you know, I think Johnny Hendricks realizes that this is, you know, put up or shut up time. And at age 33, he's not getting any younger. And, you know, the explosiveness and athleticism, you know, we've seen from him over the years, it's not going to get any better. So I think he realizes and will recognize that this is, you know, kind of a last stand type thing. And I think he's a good value play.
All right, John, fantasy analysis aside, let's look at this card for a fan. As a fan for a second here, is there a fight that you are most excited to watch on Friday?
You know, I just think, you know, the most fun fight is the one that jumps off the page to me, at least, is, well, two. The Dillashaw and Cruz, the Cruz and Garbrandt fight because of the difference in styles. Mm-hmm. You know, Garbrandt's heavy striking matched up against Cruz's elite footwork. And, you know, I think the other one that's going to be really good, I think the Dillashaw-Lineker fight's really good. You know, Lineker's power, Dillashaw's power, but mixed with his speed. So those are, those are the two fights. I'm honestly looking forward to those two fights more than the Rousey-Nunes fight. The Rousey fight's obviously getting a lot of publicity because of her comeback. But I think it's a good card. You know, the card definitely took a hit with, you know, the loss of the Velasquez-Verdum fight. But overall, it's considering some of the weaker cards the UFC has put on, this is pretty good. I think it's kind of – and we've said this before as well. It seems like times in the past when the UFC puts two title fights on a card, they think that's
– good enough.
Yeah, more or less, that's a good way to put it, just okay to kind of neglect the rest of the card and fill it with garbage fights because, hey, you know, we're giving people two title fights. You know, why do we have to stack the rest of the card, save them for another event? But even though this has two title fights on it, the depth of this card is pretty good. Even, you know, a couple of the early fights, the Alex Oliveira-Tim Means fight, which is the only Fight Pass fight, I believe, now, that's a good fight. Antonio Carlos Jr. has looked very good at middleweight. So you can make a case that the depth of this fight is very good. That the whole card is really good.
Yeah, that and the other one I wanted to bring up was the Garcia and Pyle fight. I mean, that's a minus 205 odds to finish. But even more so, the Brandon Thatch, Nico Price, that's minus 390 odds to finish. So if you're looking for knockouts on the prelims, you're going to find them. But that and, of course, man, I can't wait to see where Rousey's head's at. I mean, the analyst in me is going to pick Nunes, but the fan in me wants Rousey. I just want to see her for the long-term success of the UFC. So that's what I'm into there. But, hey, John, thanks again for joining me. I hope you enjoy the fight, and we're going to be back on for UFC 208 with Holm versus DeRandamy.
Pleasure as always, and all of our listeners, remember, Friday, not Saturday.
Yep, Friday, so definitely get those lineups in, tomorrow. Might as well start tinkering now, guys. All right, well, once again, you can follow John on Twitter at John Litterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. You can go to rotowire.com/free for a free 10-day trial to everything we have to offer. That's MMA and everything else on top of that. Once again, folks, thank you for listening.
This is the story of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. Then one day, an ordinary guy got ripped off buying razors. He was so fed up that he and his best friend started a company to fix shaving. They called it Harry's. By taking less profit and selling online, Harry's can offer quality blades for less. You can even get Harry's 5-blade razor and shave gel for free when you sign up. Just cover shipping. Click or go to harrys.com and enter code RAZOR at checkout. That's RAZOR, R-A-Z-O-R.